I've done a lot of reading of Native American culture, and they had this concept of enough. And I would like to see the world embrace the concept of enough. Maybe the outdoor industry can lead the way because there is enough. How many backpacks do you really need? I mean, I got a closet full. Granted, I worked in the space, but and didn't have to pay for a lot of them. But still, you really only need one of most things. Most of us have three, four, too many.
Hello, and welcome back to the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Carney, and I'm an outdoor and environmental writer and author of the book, Outdoor Minimalist, Waste Less Hiking, Camping, and Backpacking. The Outdoor Minimalist Podcast has the goal to give listeners actionable ways to waste less hiking, camping, backpacking, and more during every step of their process. Your impact outdoors starts long before you hit the trail and goes beyond leave no trace ethics. You'll learn how to identify sustainable outdoor brands, how to ask hard questions regarding sustainability, and begin to shift and evolve your mindset to integrate minimalism into all of your outdoor pursuits. Episode 127 of the Outdoor Minimalist Podcast can be seen as somewhat of an open letter to the outdoor industry, a call to action to do more and make less. If you follow this podcast for a while, then you know we are all about environmental action. And while I believe individuals can make a difference to achieve larger impacts, we need the industry to lead the way and decide to do better for the future of our planet and the younger generations. I had a blast chatting with Rick Sayas for this episode. And while it's a bit different from other conversations I've had on the show, it's one that I think will resonate with how many of us feel regarding sustainability and the need for a broader systemic change. Rick has worked as a guide and in sales and product development for many of the leading outdoor and adventure travel brands. He shares advice and insights on working in the outdoor industry from his experience and interviews from his popular Outdoor Biz podcast. Thanks for joining me on the Outdoor Minimalist podcast, Rick. I'm a huge fan of your podcast, and it's always fun to have a fellow podcaster on the show. So welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always fun to be on a show. I rarely get to sit on the other side of the mic, so to speak, and I really like it. So need to do more of it. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm going to start with like my standard question that I ask every guest, because I feel like it's kind of fun to get a little bit more of their background. And that's, how did you get interested in outdoor recreation and how does it fit into your life now?
You know, that's an interesting question for me because I feel like I've been in outdoor recreation my entire life. I have this funny story. It's on the new intro of my podcast about me as a kid, the family telling stories of me at 2 years old, standing by the door, hollering, side, 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 because I always wanted to be outside. So from a very young age, I've just been outside all the time. I have a photo of me walking by the sidewalk and my grandfather's old Scout is parked right there. And I remember him taking me on outdoor adventures, hunting, fishing, whatever, from as long as I can remember. So it's just been in my life since day one. And it's funny, work-wise, I kind of stumbled into it, but it's just a natural fit. And I've always done things outside. I've always been an athletic guy playing sports and hiking and fishing and all the things. So it's a natural. It's like an appendage.
Yeah, I feel like for some people, it is just, it's just a way of life. It's just a part of their life and it always has been and it always will be. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you work in the outdoor industry. And if anyone has listened to your podcast, then they'll probably know a bit about this story. But what is your career in the industry? Like, how did you get there and where are you now?
So I completely stumbled into it, actually. I went to college to study architecture. In high school, I won a bunch of drawing awards for some of my drafting work and stuff in high school. And Cal Poly Pomona, the local college closest to me, had an architecture program. So I went into that. And of course, those programs are always full. So you have to take general ed stuff to start with. And I was still living at home and spending too much time with my high school buddies and not going to school. And it was in danger of flunking out. And the professors or the deans or whoever called me in and said, you probably need to go figure out if you're serious about this and not waste your money here. So I went to a junior college and stumbled into an environmental law course and a wildlife biology course. And those two courses, they weren't about outdoor recreation, so to speak, but they exposed me to the fact that I could get a degree in something related to outdoors. Went back to Cal Poly Pomona and looked at the curriculum and realized I could get an outdoor recreation degree. So went and got into that and became president of the Student Rec Society on campus and was just fully immersed. In order to graduate, I had to do an internship And I found an internship down at a outdoor school camp, sixth grade camp at Palomar Mountain in San Diego. Did that, met a guy there who was a teacher that was going to do this summer camp in the summer up on the Kern Plateau and wanted to know if I wanted to go work with him. I was also working at A16 at the time. That was my first connection to outdoor retail. And in going to work at this camp, it was put on by a river company, rafting company, Kern River Tours. And their requirement was you had to go to their guide school before you could work at their camp. So went to guide school on the American River and thought, man, this is really fun, and became a river guide, didn't go to camp, you know, worked at Palomar School during the school year, river guided in the summers, and through river guiding, met the guys that were bringing Mont Bell to the U.S. way back when. They met them at an outdoor retailer show in Reno back in the day and became a sales rep. So that's how I got into the outdoor space I'm in today. I've been there ever since.
It's always interesting how people in outdoor recreation can make their way, because I feel like there's a lot of people that wasn't their intention. It's just like they ended up here because it's something they're interested in doing.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you had one of your first retail jobs during that time as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you worked in retail in the outdoor industry for quite some time.
I didn't work directly in retail. I worked in retail at A16.
Okay.
And then the way I got to meet the Mont Bell guys was when I was guiding up on the Kern, me and a couple guys opened a little shop up there, and we ran mountain bike trips and we rented rafts and we did all these things. And I had the retail experience. So they said, well, why don't you go to the outdoor retailer show and find some stuff for us to buy and put in our shop? So I did that. Met the Mont Bell guys and came back and said, hey, sorry, I got a job. I'm not coming back to work here, and became a rep. So I worked on the wholesale side of that business my entire career as a sales manager, director of sales, product manager, that kind of thing.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So you got a lot of background behind the scenes knowledge of kind of like the happenings with products in the outdoor industry.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably way more. Well, you know, I was pretty familiar with retail because I hired and fired sales reps and, you know, met with buyers and things at the retail shows. So I knew what we had to do to get our products in the door and keep it in the door performance wise. And then somewhere along the line, I became a product guy, product design guy. I think that was Jansport, I think was my first job there. And I really loved the product side because it kind of appealed to the creative side of me, the architect in me, right? So that was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So a lot of the topics on this show revolve around products and the impact and sustainability of different companies. And so were there any trends that you noticed throughout the years in terms of the way products were being sold or developed, or like even buying trends? I don't know, just general trends, any trends.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of trends. I mean, I think the product has gotten better and lighter over the years, which is pretty cool for those of us that carry big, heavy backpacks. One of the first trends that I think I noticed, a lot of us noticed on the sales side, was when everybody started selling online, the whole online thing. You know, still Amazon wasn't even a thing yet. It was just online. Everybody had an online store, and that kind of freaked everybody out because those people that didn't, you know, how's that going to work? And then the whole pricing thing, there was a lot of things around that selling online. So that was a big deal. I think the product in some ways hasn't changed. I mean, you look at a backpack today and it's still like a backpack it was years ago, but the materials have improved, the functionality has improved, the lightweightness of the fabrics, the durability of the fabrics, the ecological impact of the fabrics, all those things have improved a ton. So those are the two big trends, I think, probably that impact, I think, every brand that has come up through the ranks.
So observing those changes in the industry and like how we have gotten to the place that we are today, do you think that there's anything the outdoor industry is specifically doing well in terms of their ecological impact or sustainability, kind of managing those things, especially since we're learning so much more about the influence of production?
I think we're getting there. I think the biggest improvements and trends I've seen or more along the human side. I mean, I think the DEI, you know, has improved a ton by letting more people come into the space and work into the space and participate in the space. I think the wholesale retail side of the world has gotten more corporate, which has been a negative in my opinion. I think some of these publicly traded companies, rightfully so, because they're a publicly traded company, they're beholden now to a different master. That, you know, once you become public, you have someone new calling the shots. Whereas if you're still independent, you can call the shots for your own company. And I think that has caused these companies to get too big, make too much stuff, you know, have to sell everywhere. So it impacts the retailers. That's just been a downside, I think. I don't know how to fix that. You know, everybody wants to sell more. I'm not sure. I've done a lot of reading of Native American culture, and they had this concept of enough. And I would like to see the world embrace the concept of enough. Maybe the outdoor industry can lead the way, because there is enough. How many backpacks do you really need? I mean, I got a closet full. Granted, I worked in the space, but and didn't have to pay for a lot of them. But still, you know, you really only need one of most things. Most of us have three, four, you know, too many.
Yeah. Do you think that that will ever be possible? I mean, we live in a capitalist society. So like, yeah, everyone probably does have enough of everything that they need. And I can't say everyone, because there are definitely people in need. But yeah, I don't even know what that would look like in terms of, as an industry that's like selling products, and obviously you need to make a profit, then how do you balance that?
Well, I tell you, I think it's going to happen one of two ways. Either we're going to figure it out, or Mother Nature is going to figure it out for us. Because we just can't be. I was talking to a buddy of mine. He is looking for a job now in the outdoor space. He worked in the outdoor space for a long time. And we were talking about this, and he sent me this photo of somewhere in a desert is a place where all these apparel companies go to just dump their stuff. And it just, I forget the name of it, Alchemy Desert or Altamai Desert or something. I'll have to find it up and send you the link. But he sent me the link of this just big pile of just burning all the time, just stuff. And I think as we see our landfills getting more and more full and our waters, you know, I think you were talking to somebody about forever plastics, as was I. And this just, we have plastic in our bodies now because there's so much plastic in the water. And so either we're going to figure it out, or Mother Nature's going to figure it out for us, is my opinion.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm pessimistic, so I would guess the latter. But
I'm with you. Till we change that money thing, it ain't going to change. Capitalism is run amok, and I've been involved in it, and I see how it is. Everybody wants more and more money, but at some point we got to throw the flag and say, no, I got enough.
Yeah, kind of thinking in that same vein then, do you think that there are specific areas that can be improved beyond what you already stated? So like beyond that idea of we have enough, are there actual tangible things you think the industry can be doing that could kind of move us in that direction?
It's interesting. I had a woman, an author, and a University of Denver professor on my show recently. The episode is going to drop March 19th, I believe. Her name is Rachel Gross. And she wrote a book on the history of the outdoor industry, but way more related to the gear side of things. And one of the things I was reading is I ordered her book on Amazon, and I was reading one of the, you know, the blurbs they put out to promote the book. And it said how it's funny how Shopping All the Way to the Woods, the book is called Shopping All the Way to the Woods, How the Outdoor Industry Sold Nature to America. But the funny thing is, as we all get ready to plan our next trip, the first thing it involves is a trip to the store. You know, I just need some more gas for my stove. I'm only going to get gas for my stove. And you go and you see all the shiny toys. And so you buy a new pack, or you buy a new stove, or you buy a new whatever. And somehow we have to reverse that trend where we don't always make the first trip to the store, and we don't always buy the new thing, because all this stuff is made so fantastically well. I mean, it's just bomber, from backpacks to jackets to stoves. They just last forever if you take care of them. And when you look at some of the new whiz-bang features, you don't really need them. I mean, all I need to do 9 times out of 10 is heat my water for coffee, because I'm eating food that I brought that's in the ice chest. I don't have to heat that up too. I don't really cook when I'm back there. So I don't need a stove that can bake brownies. I just need a stove that can heat water. Now, we're all different. I know many of us cook. I know how to use a Dutch oven pretty well, so I can do that as well. But I think we really need to look at that. And again, I don't know how that's going to change. I don't know if it's going to be those of us that see what's going on, those of us that witness the too much plastic. I don't know, but somehow.
That's kind of like on the consumer side. As consumers, we do have an impact, and we can control the market to an extent. But also, we're so continuously advertised to, especially with social media and product placements and all of those things. Moving out of that mentality will also require the industry to adjust to that idea as well. We don't need a new spring 2024 version of last year's backpack kind of thing. And so do you think that the industry could do anything in that respect to minimize the amount of shopping that occurs and the amount of waste?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been talking to some people and thinking about some changes to my show. And one of the things that keeps coming up is more focus on the activity side of what we do. Focus on the places. that we can go and do all these fantastic adventures. More focus on the people that live locally in these places, that manage these places. And I think if we as an industry focus more on the destinations and the adventures and less on the product that you need to go there, that might change it. I don't know. Because there's so much to talk about of all the great places that we hike and bike and climb, from the local population that manages the towns and the parks and all that, to just the adventure itself. You know, I mean, some of these climber guys are pulling off some crazy stuff these days, and it just keeps getting, you know, I don't know where it is. 5'11 used to be a big thing in my day, and now I think it's much lower than that. So where that stops, or higher than that, but where that stops, it, who knows? But those kind of things, I think, might shift the focus to the activity, have fun, do the thing. You know how to survive while you're there. You're not only going to be there for a week. So even if you don't eat, you're not going to die. Just have fun out there.
Some of the climbing publications, I feel like, do a decent job about like highlighting like human achievements and things like that. But I think it really is dependent on like the brand and the publication and their values. So that's an interesting thought process on how storytelling could kind of like push us in the right way. Because that's such like a human desire to tell stories.
Mm-hmm. And communicate. Listen to them. Not only tell, listen to them too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Adventuring plans on your calendar? Remember to grab your Lava Linens travel towel on your way out the door. Founded by a mother-daughter team, Lava Linens crafts durable, luxurious travel towels as a more sustainable and better performing alternative to microfiber and cotton towels. Powered by flax, hemp, and Tencel, they're designed to be by your side for years to come. Use the code OUTDOORMINIMALIST for 15% off your next order. Okay, we're going to look bigger picture again. I know that you might not be able to answer this specifically like in an expert capacity, but if you were to like choose one piece of product production, what do you feel like would be the most wasteful?
It's all the fabrics. You know, there's a lot of chemicals and things that go into creating all these cool fabrics. And everything from hard goods and backpacks and apparel and clothing is made from fabrics. We can figure out a way to improve that. That would have a significant impact.
Yeah. And in regards to textile waste, and then there's a huge trend in the last decade or so, like for textile recycling. So do you think that that is a good direction to go in? Do you think we should rely on those advances to, I don't want to say like save us, but prevent the waste as much as we can?
I don't know how the recycling thing works, because I think there's probably a lot of use of water. And it seems like whenever water gets involved, that's what carries the bad things all across the planet. So I would think maybe rather than recycling the fabric, we could still recycle the product, but somehow, so your backpack has 57 colors now. That shows that you've got a long life out of it. You've been all over the world. And I think that's a good thing. Right? Wear that as a badge of honor, not as like, oh, I got an ugly backpack. No, you don't. Dude, that's an awesome backpack. You know, those kind of things I think would help is continuing to reuse as much of the stuff that's currently here as much as we can possibly do until it's just so threadbare that it can't even hold a compass anymore, you know, something like that.
I guess what would be, if you were speaking to a room full of industry professionals, so whether they're like company CEOs or product designers, wherever they work within the industry, they work within gear stuff. Okay. What would you say to them as a general call to action?
I would say, I know that the powers that be in all your organizations want you to make X this season, whether that's 25% more, 100% more, 10 new styles, whatever that is. How can you push back and say, we're just not going to do that because we don't really think that we need to make X. We're going to make Y. And maybe Y is 20% less than X. You know, how can we push back on the folks that want us to make more and drive the less mantra? And I don't know the manufacturers will be able to do that. I think that's going to be driven by consumers. I think once consumers realize that, I don't need to go buy a new backpack. I don't need to go see the new REI. I've been to all the REI. It looks like all the rest of the REIs. Your adventure shouldn't first require a trip to the store. Oh, only the grocery store. That's it. Not the outdoor store. Shouldn't need to go there anymore. I'm sure you got a closet full of stuff. And I'm going to get a lot of pushback from that, I'm sure, from all my outdoor industry friends. What are you talking about? But, you know, the older we get, the more we realize that this planet, and I don't think we even have to get older anymore to realize that this planet is just being worked.
Yeah, would that be kind of like your main call to action for consumers? Because I feel like a lot of times, I mean, we've talked about it a lot on this show, like consumers sometimes feel a little bit powerless in that space. I am not a fan, I guess, of like pushing responsibility to consumers. I think consumers do have a responsibility, but I also feel like the product producers and industry as a whole have a larger responsibility because they're the
I agree.
ones that are putting it in our face, essentially, and making us make a decision. And so I guess as consumers, how do you think we can push businesses to make more responsible decisions and then hopefully reach that tipping point where they are on the same side?
It'll probably take a combination of both. I think you're right. I think there are a lot of, don't get me wrong, there are a lot of brands out there that are doing a lot of these things already. We just need more and more, and in my opinion, all of them to do more of it. And I don't think consumers are going to drive the bus either because it's their job to shop and they're going to go shop. Or at least maybe we change their job. Maybe your job is not to shop. Maybe your job is not to shop. Keep using the old one. I'm not sure. That's a tricky question. That's a tough one. I don't know who that's how that's going to play out. But I think somewhere along the line, we as the industry need to drive the mantra on that because it's we're the industry, right? I mean, I think it's funny how Patagonia had the don't buy this, whatever their Christmas message was, and everybody was wondering if, are they really, do they mean that or are they, is that tongue in cheek? Because they make a lot of stuff. And maybe if more brands decided that we're all going to close on Black Friday, we're going to make 20% less this year than 20% more, maybe that might send the message. But I'm not sure what the catalyst is going to be. I think that, the capitalism is, the exact opposite of what we need. And it's changing. It's not all gloom and doom. There's a lot more people out there that are reusing. There's a lot more people that sell repurposed products, well, used gear. We have one of these here in Bishop. It's sad to see how much stuff is in there. They're turning away stuff. I went to take a down jacket in there the other day and I want to try to get a few bucks out of this. It's got life left. And he said, we don't need any more down jackets. We're full.
Yeah, used gear is always a great avenue. I've gotten a lot of really awesome used equipment that
Yeah.
I mean, I've used it for probably 6+ years or so. And that's a great way to save money as well. That made me think of, I know I've talked to you about the Forever Chemicals podcast. Something that was interesting about the research and stuff involved in that is that it seemed like the regulations are what pushed the industry to change. In terms of like laws and regulations to mitigate environmental harm, I'm not sure how effective they are, but it seems in some capacity they can be. So, do you have any feelings about those?
I think that's one of the ways to change it. And you see a lot of these, mostly it seems, countries from other sides, other places around the world that are implementing these regulations. The US is doing a decent job, but again, the US can do a lot more too. And I think that would be another third leg of the stool, if you will. The manufacturers have to decide to make less. The consumers have to decide to buy less. And the powers that be, the countries have to tell us to make less and make better. Tipping point there where that will all change. When we'll see that? Will we see it in time? Is it going to happen? I don't know, but I think that's the three-legged stool that needs to happen. Everybody all needs to get together and fix it. And again, don't get me wrong, guys. We have made a ton of progress. I mean, it's so much better than it was back when I was a high schooler or college just starting out. So we're moving in the right direction. I just feel for my niece and nephew. I hope we move there fast enough.
To kind of close out the episode in the vein of storytelling, do you have any favorite outdoor adventures throughout your entire life? If you had to pick one and you look back on and you're like, that was either the most impactful or the most memorable.
I've been pretty fortunate to probably have adventured on almost every continent but Australia and do everything from rafting to trekking. It's been so much fun. And I think there's a common theme. I don't think there's one adventure that stands out, but I think the common theme of all of them is the group. I've never had a bad group, whether and some of them have been work related at the time, some of them not. And it just always, it seems like when you get a group of humans together and get them outside and doing outdoor things, it could be really, really crazy dangerous. Like I was on a raft trip on the Carnale River and the rain, it rained overnight and the water came up and just blew everything out and we had boats rip and everything. That was a really dangerous, scary adventure. But the people, we just all sucked it up, gutted it out, and nobody got hurt, and we made it. And same kind of things where you go on these treks in Alaska or wherever in Europe and have this beautiful time with beautiful people. It's all about the people. A group of strangers become best friends at the end of a trip, whatever the trip is. I really have had so many good ones. I can't pick one. Sorry.
I actually, I don't know if I would be able to pick one either, but Someone asked me that question, like, I don't know, a year or so ago, and I kind of had a similar answer where I was like, well, it really is the community. I mean, I do a lot of solo trips as well, but they tend to be slightly less memorable than the ones that you have a community to share it with and you have that experience together.
Yeah, I've never done a solo trip. I need to do that. I've been had that on my bucket list.
Well, awesome. It's fun to chat a little bit more and hear more about your
Thank you.
background, I guess. I know that we've crossed paths a few times, but how can listeners learn more about you and check out the Outdoor Biz the Outdoor Biz podcast?
Easiest way is to go to my website, ricksays.com, and that's got three links on there. One is listen, that'll take you to the podcast. Two is look, that'll take you to a lot of my photography. And then the other is learn, where there's some of the coaching things that I've done and stuff. So that's the best place to go to see all the things that I've done and do. And the podcast, new episode comes out every Tuesday.
Amazing. And I'll be sure to link to all those things in the show notes so everyone can find that easily. But thank you so much, Rick, for taking the time to sit down and chat today.
Thank you. It's been great.
Thanks for listening. And if you like what you hear, let me know. Leave a review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Instagram at outdoor.minimalist.book, on YouTube, or subscribe to our weekly newsletter at theoutdoorminimalist.com. For even more updates, other educational resources, and to help build an outdoor community with the shared goal to create a better outdoor space as we recreate.